Chapter 17. Beating on these hollow caves, this black den with rocks and moss, overgrown with eldest moss, the rude portals that give light more to terror than delight, this my chamber of neglect, walled about with disrespect. From all these and this dull air a fit object for despair, she hath taught me by her might to draw comfort and delight. But these lines, however good, do not bear with them much of the general character of the English antique. Something more of this will be found in Corbett's Farewell to the Fairies. We copy a portion of Marvell's Aidan lamenting for her faun, which we prefer, not only as a specimen of the elder poets, but in itself as a beautiful poem, abounding in pathos, exquisitely delicate imagination and truthfulness to anything of its species. It is a wondrous thing, how fleet was on those little silver feet, with what a pretty skipping grace it oft would challenge me the race, and when it left me far away twould stay, and run again, and stay, for it was nimbler much than hinds, and trod as if on the four winds. I have a garden of my own, but so with roses overgrown, and lilies, that you would it guess to be a little wilderness, and all the springtime of the year it only loved to be there. Among the beds of lilies I have sought it oft where it should lie, yet could not, till itself would rise, find it, although before mine eyes. For in the flaxen lilies shaded like a bank of lilies laid, upon the roses it would feed until its lips even seemed to bleed, and then to me twould boldly trip, and print those roses on my lip, but all its chief delight was still with roses thus itself to fill, and its pure virgin limbs, to fold in whitest sheets of lilies cold. Had it lived long, it would have been lilies without, roses within. How truthful an air of lamentations hangs here upon every syllable. It pervades all. It comes over the sweet melody of the words, over the gentleness and grace which we fancy in the little maiden herself, even over the half-playful, half-petulant air with which she lingers on the beauties and good qualities of her favorite, like the cool shadow of a summer cloud over a bed of lilies and violets, and all sweet flowers. The whole is redolent with poetry of a very lofty order. Every line is an idea conveying either the beauty and playfulness of the faun, or the artlessness of the maiden, or her love, or her admiration, or her grief, or the fragrance and warmth and appropriateness of the little nest-like bed of lilies and roses which the faun devoured as it lay upon them, and could scarcely be distinguished from them by the once happy little damsel who went to seek her pet with an arch and rosy smile on her face. Consider the great variety of truthful and delicate thought in the few lines we have quoted. The wonder of the little maiden at the fleetness of her favorite, the little silver feet, the faun challenging his mistress to a race with pretty skipping grace, running on before, and then, with head turned back, awaiting her approach only to fly from it again. Can we not distinctly perceive all these things? How exceedingly vigorous, too, is the line, and trod as if on the four winds. A vigor apparent only when we keep in mind the artless character of the speaker, and the 4 feet of the favorite, one for each wind. Then consider the garden of Wyone, so overgrown, entangled with roses and lilies, as to be little wilderness the faun loving to be there, and there lie the maiden seeking it here it should lie, and not being able to distinguish it from the flowers until itself would rise the lying among the lilies, like a bank of lilies the loving to ill itself with roses, and its pure virgin limbs, to fold in whitest sheets of lilies cold. And these things being its chief delights, and then the preeminent beauty and naturalness of the concluding lines, whose very hyperbole only renders them more true to nature when we consider the innocence, the artlessness, the enthusiasm, the passionate girl, and more passionate admiration of the bereaved child. Had it lived long, it would have been lilies without, roses within. *Book of Gems*, edited by S.C. Hall, poems, to the noblest of her sex, the author of The Drama of Exile. To Miss Elizabeth Barrett Browning of England, I dedicate this volume with the most enthusiastic admiration and with the most sincere esteem, 1845 E. A. P. Preface. These trifles are collected and republished chiefly with a view to their redemption from the many improvements to which they have been subjected while going at random the rounds of the press. I am naturally anxious that what I have written should circulate as I wrote it, if it circulate at all. In defense of my own taste, nevertheless, it is incumbent upon me to say that I think nothing in this volume of much value to the public, or very creditable to myself. Events not to be controlled have prevented me from making, at any time, any serious effort in what, under happier circumstances, would have been the field of my choice. With me, poetry has been not a purpose, but a passion, and the passions should be held in reverence. They must not, they cannot at will be excited, with an eye to the paltry compensations, or the more paltry commendations, of mankind. E.A. P. 1845, The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books Circes of Sorrow, Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken sad uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon I heard again a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see, then, what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not an instant stopped or stayed he, but, with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched, and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore, though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly grim and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, evermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl, to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing, that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such name as evermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing farther than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, "Thir friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before." Then the bird said, evermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters, is its only stock and store caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast, and followed faster till his songs one burden bore till the dirges of his hope, that melancholy burden bore of ever nevermore. But the raven still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird, and bust and door. Then, upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking evermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining, that the lamp gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then, method, the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by angels whose faint footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee by these angels, he hath sent thee respite, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenner. Quaff, O quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenner. Quaff the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil. Prophet still, if bird or devil. Whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil prophet still, if bird or devil. By that heaven, that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden if, within the distant Aden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenner, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenner. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend. I shrieked, upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow, that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore. Tilde, 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 end of text, tilde, 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 published 1845. Equals, 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 the bells. I hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, 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 in the icy air of night. While the stars, that oversprinkle all the heavens, seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight, keeping time, 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 in a sort of runic rhyme, to the tintinnabulation, that so musically wells from the bells, 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 bells from the jingling, and the tinkling of the bells. 2. Hear the mellow wedding bells, golden bells. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.